podcasting to the world.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace. That was Mike Williams. And this is the Gospel Revolution.
Someone apocalypse to me. I never felt like this before. Can't see evil anymore. I would have sworn I was free before. This is what I've been waiting for. Welcome to freedom.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, the 31st of August, 2017, broadcasting. Really? The end of August?
Yeah.
Comes so quickly. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, bringing you more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Mr. Williams?
Good evening.
Hang on. I'll tell you when it's your turn to speak. Mr. Williams, how are you?
You didn't tell me it was my time to speak.
So why did you speak? Okay, now it's your turn to speak.
Because you're on the camera going, what?
What? How are you, mate?
Well, yes, I am wonderful. I am so glad that you asked.
I thought we established that last week. I don't ask because I care.
Well, following up on your comment about the last of August. Yeah, how did we get here? Well, it really is quite amazing. And yes, here we are. And that's the thing that's important about the end of August is it the next month is September. Oh my goodness. On the 4th, I fly to Michigan, where I'm going to be spending time with Randy French. And we're going to be doing some videos. You know, this Randy French dude, I don't think people realize not only what he does for us and for them, anything that has quality behind it, Randy is somewhere in the mix as far as the way we sound. He's definitely a part of that. But Randy is a rabid gospel revolutionary. He consumes the gospel hours by hours by hours every day. And occasionally it is Don that gets the calls in the middle of listening. He listens to this PowerCast more than anybody I know.
Multiple times.
Yeah. And every time he listens, he's got to call either Don or me.
Hey, big boy. That's what he says. Hey, big boy. And when I say, what do you mean big? You think I'm fat? And he says, oh, no, that's my way of appreciating you. I think that you're big. I think you're the big man. And I got this question. You said on the PowerCast, yada-da-da-da.
It's like mockery is the highest form of flattery. Yeah.
Well, it gets our attention with Randy.
So, no, this man is writing his own book, and he is just unstoppable. This is the man who destroyed all of my videos and audio tapes that he recorded. He recorded them. He was the sound man in this church. And sound, man, they had a big platform that sat back in the middle of the auditorium out in the congregation, and three or four steps up to it. A quarter wall all the way around, and several staff members up there, of whom Randy was in charge. After I was invited not to come back.
Now, would that be by the pastor who ran away with his secretary?
Yes.
Oh, well, there's nothing like getting thrown out by a hypocrite.
Then Randy French was ordered to destroy anything recorded by me. So he was ordered and did, to the best of his ability, destroy everything that was recorded by me, even though everything I'd said before that day they thought was from the mouth of God.
What did you do on that day, which was a dividing line?
I was talking about righteousness, mm-hmm. and that the promises of God do not come through the righteousness of the law. And then, lo and behold, 10 to 12 years later, he's going through a box in the garage and finds a video in the bottom of it with my name on it. He begins to kind of swear at himself. I thought I destroyed all these things, you know. And he was so sure that he had destroyed them all, he thought, I must have recorded something over it. So Randy can't throw anything away.
Yeah.
just, it's not possible. So he thought he had to sit down in his TV room and pop this video in and sat down and turned it on. And it was me. And it was the session I did that got me thrown out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You talk about a fast forward on a videotape. This was a 12-year fast forward. Here he is sitting on his sofa 10 to 12 years later. And he said, the very first line that came out of your mouth, I knew I had never heard in my life. The second line that came out of your mouth, I had never heard in my life. So I had to keep listening. He said, I had never heard anything that you said on that, even though I was the one that recorded it. So there was this tremendous thing that happened for Randy. He called me sometime after that and just wanted more information. And it's been that way ever since. And that's been 10 to 15 years ago now, maybe more. Randy will have to tell us how long that's been. But it has been an amazing journey for this man, and he is very dear to the Gospel Revolution and to Mike Williams Ministries, to me personally. I know he is to you, Don, and we just so appreciate Randy and everything that he does. He's such an important part of everything that you guys hear. Randy is a very important part of it.
He sure is, and we're going to hear more from Randy a little bit later in the show, and we'll just wait till then so you can hear a little bit of Randy's wisdom. Just before we move on in the show, Michael, what did you think of my prophecy last week?
Well, it's the first accurate prophecy I've heard, since I started hearing prophecy.
And just to remind our family, I said, I'll prove to you that I'm right, that all I'm right that all are God's children by prophesying that even today, yea, verily, verily.
Beverly, Beverly.
Beverly, Beverly, my son, the sun shall turn dark.
Yeah, and it did.
It did. So prophecy being what it is, there you go, my friends. I am.
Now we know for sure that everyone is approved of God. Wow.
Now, does that make me the official prophet of the Gospel Revolution?
You are. Oh. There's your title.
Oh, I'm feeling so hot right now.
Yeah. It's called Suck Up Prophet.
Suck Up Prophet. There is nothing. There is nothing praiseworthy or laudable about you. There is just not. I mean, every time I think I've got myself somewhere, bam.
It's called keeping the sheep in line.
Keeping the sheeple.
Yes.
I guess that makes you the chief sheeple keeper.
Yes.
Gospel Revolution.
Okay, this week we got an email from Michael Foster. Now, I got to talk with Michael Foster this week. What a great guy. And there's a couple of things he's doing. He's setting up a home Bible study. Sent me the screed. I think you got it too, Mike.
Yes.
And I just loved it. And I said, go for it. Just fill your boots, mate. And anything that we can do to help you, whatever you need, let us know.
Yeah.
But he said in this email, he said, Hi, Beris. Great to finally get a chance to talk to you. After we talked, I realized we were talking about the same program. I already had the Scripture for All interlinear computer program. I love it and share your enjoyment of the original Greek language. In case you're wondering what he means, if you go to www.scriptureforall, it's all in letters except the numeral four, which is a numeral, scriptureforall.com, you will find my very favorite Greek interlinear. And you can download it as a program to install on your computer, or you can actually read it off the web. It doesn't matter which one you do, although I prefer the installed version. And this was written by a fellow called Knock, K-N-O-C-H, who wrote this around about the turn of the last century and a little bit later, and was a darling of the Jehovah's Witnesses, because what he did was every Greek word was only translated as one English word, and every English word was the product of only one Greek word. In other words, you got a highly literal translation. So he said, I attached the short article I put together on the subject of wood, hay, and stubble. Now, he talked to me about this in our conversation. I said, hey, listen, I don't want to answer this right now because I need to read the context, but I would love for you to write it in and get Mike in on this as well. And he's talking about something my mama always used to threaten me with, and that was, well, if something comes out of your mouth that's not true, it's wood, hay, and stubble. If you do something which is not good, it's wood, hay, and stubble. It'll be burned up, blah, 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 blah. So he says, this is often misconstrued by the churches that we touched on in our conversation. Could you look at it and let me know what you think? I also sent a copy to Mike. Maybe it could be used either for a radio pod short discussion, or even part of a presentation at conference on the works. Now, Michael is going to be at the conference.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Talk soon, Michael Foster. And here is, and it's a rather long dissertation here, but I think that it's...
Yeah, let's go into this. I really enjoyed it, and the perspective on this is really good.
He says, wood, hay, and stubble, Michael Foster, August 25, 2017. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 to 15 are often misused to emphasize the need for individuals considered born-again believers to produce either the right kind of individual good works or a lack of works to remind the believer how their own personal works or sins of omission will be treated by rewards in heaven by either loss or gain. Particularly verses 12 and 13. In the attempt to set a gold standard, if you will, for what good works are, there is that word works again. It is taught that one shoulda, coulda, done better sounds like guilt, fear, and shame, 101, doesn't it? Before they have to appear at the throne of judgment, another misunderstood portion of the Bible.
What verses are these again, Don?
These are 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 through 15, and the most recent verses he emphasized was 12 and 13.
Chapter 3?
1 Corinthians 3, yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
One's lack of good works are used to shame the new Christian believer from either not doing enough or having less than exemplary Christian works to show for Christ and the gospel. Fire is used in the Bible to describe the purging or burning away of gross things to be discarded. And so it is when gold and silver are put into a crucible. Can I just make an aside here? And that is, the Greek word for fire is P-U-R, from which we get the word pure. If you verbalize that or turn it into a verb, it becomes purify. Michael continues, in all this, churches are fond of using Paul's example here to teach that unless one has the right kind of good works to show, they will be burned up. Gold, silver, and precious stones, after all, have a better chance of coming through fire, whereas works of wood, hay, and stubble, that is, wood, grass, and straw in the Greek, have scarcely a chance of holding up. These passages are wrongly used out of context by the churches to urge the believer to produce enough good works so as to obtain a reward in heaven. almost sounds, just this is me speaking again, almost sounds like you're held in the balance and the balances are not in your favor and off to hell you go.
Mm-hmm.
He says, or else suffer the shame and embarrassment of losing out by seeing their works burned up. Paul's example has nothing to do with any future judgment of the individual, since all of us and all of our works have already been judged at the cross, and each and there's a great point, Michael, the fact that did Jesus die for future sins or only past sins? So Michael writes, and all of our works have already been judged at the cross, and each and every one of us made righteous according to the gospel. Paul is careful not to misconstrue this example of burning away or burning off when in verse 15 he states that he, the workman, will of course be saved, even if his ministry doesn't pass this test of fire.
Mm-hmm.
Putting all this into context, we see that Paul is addressing the jealousy, animosity, and striving amongst those involved in ministering the gospel. He is describing the quality or manner of presenting the gospel rather than the personal life, deeds, or activities of the individual. In chapter 4, verses 6 to 17, he describes these workers as deputies or subservants of Christ, who he pleads with to not be so puffed up one over the other or against the other in the way that they present the gospel, but instead to imitate him in the way he originally taught them to present the good news. He then explains that for this reason, he is sending Timothy to them to remind them how to do this. Paul's focus is not on the redeemed individual made righteous in Christ at all. He is simply stating that the only foundation that can be built on is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, which he preached. In other words, if the message is not based on this, it will not stand or cut the mustard, or in this particular case, pass the test of fire.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Foster, you're quite a writer, mate.
It's good we don't have to pay him on his pay grade.
By the word, yes.
You know, you can read down through this entire chapter of 1 Corinthians, chapter 3. And it starts out in chapter 3 about the divisions, about being carnal and walking as men, saying, I'm of Paul and I'm of Apollos. Paul was addressing the foolishness of all of that. You can't take Paul starting out in this chapter talking about the foolishness of saying I'm of Paul or I'm of Apollos, and then switch to a philosophical dissertation about the importance of works. He's actually showing how foolish this all is. That's how the whole chapter starts. And if you go all the way back, chapter 2 and even into chapter 1, he's saying, for the Jews require a sign and the Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But to them which are called, both Jews and Gentiles, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. So that's the subject. He's talking about the foolishness of everybody's everything, the foolishness of Jewishness, the foolishness of Greekness, Gentileness. The foolishness of I'm in with Paul, I'm in with Apollos, I'm with Peter or James or John. These are my examples. And what he's saying is all of these works of all of these people, Jew, Gentile, Peter, the Greeks, it doesn't make any difference who it is. All the works are burned up at the cross. The point he's trying to get across is that we're not measuring works anymore. Works has been dealt with. Then look at the verses that close out chapter 3, in case you're wondering whether this picture frame fits. Verse 21, therefore let no man glory in men. We've recapped this. Michael's taught on this. We went back and took into consideration all the way back to chapter 1, what the subject is, chapter 2, chapter 3, in its entirety. And this is the conclusion. Therefore, let no man glory in men, for all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death or things present or things to come. All are yours. And ye are Christ's, and Christ is God's. You're all one. So why the evaluation of works? Why the getting obsessed with who's of who? Why obsessed with your Jewishness? Why obsessed with your Gentileness? Why obsessed with who you follow? It's all ridiculous. Why get obsessed with how many works you've done and how many are going to last? This was all burned up at the cross. This issue of fire at the cross is very interesting. If there wasn't a fire at the cross, then there is no type and shadow for us to see from the old covenant about the sacrifices having to be consumed by fire. If Jesus was indeed our sacrifice, there had to be a consuming fire. Now, our God is a consuming fire. So we don't have to have a physical fire because God himself is a consuming fire. God himself, fire, God himself, fire, burned up all works, consumed and received the sacrifice in its entirety. And now, as the same as Christ is God's, and we are also Christ's. We belong. Everybody belongs. Christ to God, God to Christ to us to Christ, us to God. That's good news.
Mike Foster, thank you. Love what you said. The only foundation that can be built on is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
Now, which he preached. Now, family, why don't you have a look at all of the beliefs, faith statements, the belief statements, see how many of them are built on the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. I think that'd be a great start to a study.
It's a good assignment.
Okay, now, Michael, September 15, 16, 17 are special dates at the Carriage House Inn.
They are indeed. I fly back in from Michigan on the 11th. I'm here the 12th. I think I fly out the 13th. And that puts me there a day before the conference. And then we start on Friday.
So if somebody wanted to see you for, say, if supper on Thursday night, you'd actually be there.
I will be. Most of my meals I have alone there at the Carriage House. If anybody would join me, I sure would enjoy it.
Okay, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., 7 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I like your goal, Michael Williams. You like to keep people...
Oh, I'm going to hear it again.
You want to keep people out of church on Sunday morning. I love it.
Well, and also the Saturday night, please be aware that Wade Brewer is going to be our guest speaker there.
Now, Wade Brewer would be the single most fascinating guy I think I've met in the Gospel Revolution. Now, don't take it bad, people. This guy is a picturesque teacher whose pictures I can't forget.
No, exactly.
We interviewed him once on the show, and the man is fascinating.
Oh, he really is. He's got a picture to tell.
and you've tied him down for a whole session.
Yes, we did. And I'm very proud of myself for that. Wade is, I've told people for years that Wade Brewer is my favorite teacher, if anybody wants to know. I enjoy a lot of people that teach, but my favorite teacher is Wade Brewer.
Why?
I'm spellbound every time I sit to listen. I'm just so glued. I remember the first time I got to sit and listen to the gospel instead of teach the gospel. And that wasn't when I was sitting listening to Norval Hayes and Kenneth Copeland, believe me. And it very well may have been Wade Brewer, actually, was my first experience of sitting there and listening and hearing the gospel from somebody else. It was a magical experience. So it could be some of my early memories of getting to have that experience the first time. And now that's not an odd experience for me anymore. I mean, Dawn has been there with me and goodness, heard so much good gospel there. Richard Mull, Derek was up with me there. Well, the list just could go on and on and on. I mean, there's no end to it. We've sat and listened to Jeff Robertson share the gospel down in Cullman, Alabama. I just don't know that I could ever communicate what that's felt like from my perspective and my perspective of what the gospel is. I first heard the gospel from my own mouth. That is the first time I ever heard the gospel. I know that that sounds weird. It sounds strange. It sounds strange saying it. It sounds strange. It's even stranger experiencing it. Believe me. I had never heard the gospel of peace from any mouth, no mouth on earth. I searched and searched for the gospel of peace in a book, in a sermon, anything I could find, and there was nothing, zero. The first time I heard the gospel of peace, it came out of my mouth. So to sit and hear others teach on these subjects, it's just one of the most wonderful things that I could possibly experience. So please remember, Wade Brewer will be there on Saturday night. He has the entire session, and I'm very excited about it.
Now, there are a couple of other guest spots I believe you've got.
Yes, we have others that are going to be sharing for 10 to 15 minutes, though. And these folks are people that are going to be attending the conference, and we've got them on the docket, too.
There are several milestones in my experience in the gospel that have contributed to me being saved, to be honest. The very first one was listening to Mike Williams on a tape in Caloundra, north of Brisbane in Queensland. And the very first time I heard him, I said, I've been a preacher. I've been a pastor. I was born under a pew. I never heard this stuff before. And the next time I heard it that was for me a landmark was as I downloaded and listened to everything I could by Mike Williams, there was something he said, and it was like, you know, he used to say on the old intro, do you remember the first time that you realized that all that sort of stuff? And for several days, about two and a half days, I actually felt at one with the rest of the world. And I can't say that I don't know that now. I can just say that it consumed, I don't know, every waking moment. I was very much aware that those towel-headed people who were blowing up our stuff in 911, they were me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As Kate Benham says, I am introducing myself to me. So that was one. Another one was the very first time that I had the gall to call Mike Williams, speak with him. Another one was when Richard Mull, I asked him to clarify a couple of things, and I was converted on the spot.
Yeah.
And another one was the very first time I went to Calgary, and I heard the gospel, but I met gospeliers.
That's a good way of putting it.
And these have all been, you might say, landmarks. So, look, family, be there if you can, because...
Please do.
I promise you. And if you can stay in the hotel because it'll give you...
It's a lot of fun.
It is. And it's... let me see. What can I tell you about it? It's a great... Take your swimming togs, whatever you call them up there in Canada, remember. And they've got a great swimming pool. They've got two bars. They've got the most wonderful staff. And they've got Mike Williams. So make sure you're there. 15th, 16th, 17th of September at the Carriage House Inn. And what are you teaching on, just quickly, mate?
We're going to start out going, recapping this past spring. I've found some really wonderful things on part of the subject of predestination that we didn't go into thoroughly, and that was on before the foundation of the world. So I want to cap that off.
So recapping last series, yes?
We're recapping last series, and then I'm going to teach the entire book of James, verse by verse. We're going to let James speak for himself.
James the Jerk.
Yes, that's your title that you've given Brother James.
Well, I always like to give people the highest titles I can.
The and just to give you a little bit
ignore me, you.
Moving right along. If you want to find negative statements about rich people, look no further than the book of James. Five times in as many chapters, James speaks about rich people. Now, do you want to know what James says about rich people?
He says they're good. He says they're wonderful to have in your church.
You'll have to come to Calgary, Alberta to find out.
Let me just say this. James was the champion of, head of, and the prototype of the Ebionite church.
Yes.
If you want to know what that means, just Google Ebionites. And when you find their official page, you'll see that their patron saint is none other than James.
Yeah, and Ebionites are still around and still have the same basic views.
When there was a famine in Jerusalem, Paul, by the hand of the Macedonians, who were as poor as church mice, sent a gift to James.
Yeah.
If James was so good, I just give up. But I'm probably stealing your material right now.
No, not at all. I was actually watching a game show the other day, and one of the questions was something about a new thing being taught, a new gospel that teaches people they should be rich. And the answer to the trivia question was the prosperity gospel. So it's even made it into game show status.
I will bet that John Avanzini or any other proponent of the prosperity gospel never quotes from James.
Well, the weird thing is they do.
Oh, they do?
And it is so hypocritical.
Oh, tell us.
Oh, of course. Yeah, faith without works is dead is their big thing. And so the book that they draw their bottom line for the prosperity gospel to make them rich comes from the book that denounces rich people. Five times.
And if you want to know any more, family, you need to get your little precious persons up to Calgary and stay at the Carriage House Inn. If you can't stay there for whatever reason, it's booked out or something, stay somewhere and just get yourselves to the conference. September 15, 16, and 17, it's only a couple of weeks away. So, and if you call the Calgary, what is it, the Carriage House Inn in Calgary, call them, mention Grace Conferences, and you'll get a special deal.
Yes, that's correct.
Up on the website this week, we had two new articles. We had Peter, James, John, and the Seven Churches, which I wrote. And we have I Was Called to Preach by a Monkey, which Sean Smith wrote.
Did we do that last week on the show?
Oh, did we ever? And man, the response we got was... And I called that powercast A Cage of Monkeys. And it was, I'm telling you, we got some good responses.
I got personal messages on my phone about it. I got one from James Gustafson.
Oh, yeah.
One of our gospel revolutionaries in Saskatchewan, Canada. James is retired, but for James to retire, meaning to do nothing, that's never going to happen.
Well, actually... I think when James says retire, he means R-E-T-Y-R-E.
Yeah, exactly. So he drives the big combines and the machines for people in planting and in harvest there. He sold those pieces of equipment for much of his life. He was the John Deere dealer in southern Saskatchewan. So he rides the Deeres. And listens. Now, I don't hear from James by personal message, but once or twice a year. And he sent me a personal message and told me that he had listened to that particular PowerCast several times. Just blown away by it. It was just converting his soul. And this man's listened to the gospel for 25 years.
Oh, yeah. And you won't find a more, excuse me, James, please. You won't find a more cuddly teddy bear. I mean, the guy is such a gentle giant.
He is the very description of that word, yes. You see him walk in a room, you think you're in trouble. And then he opens his mouth and it's like, aw.
If you put Viney next to James back to back,
yes,
that would be the long and short of it.
That would be.
And if you want to know who Viney is, listen, she's a special friend of ours. You need to get yourself, just hire yourself off to these conferences and you'll find out.
You need to know what a Viney is. Goodness gracious. Everybody needs to know what a Viney is.
Yeah. If you're part of the Viney, you're in Christ. I'm telling you right now.
Right.
So we had these, I was called to preach by a monkey by Sean Smith. Now, this is some of the cutest writing and most poignant writing I have come across in a long time. Now, both Michael and myself have been befriended by Sean, and we both would say the same thing, that this is a unique experience and that we can't wait till the next time he calls us, I suppose.
And what a gospel experience.
Mm.
This gentleman, his true testimony is like a Paul testimony. It like the rest of all of you guys, it's a deliverance from legalism. It's a deliverance from law, a salvation of great magnitudes in a man who admittedly struggles daily, physically, mentally, and emotionally, and has no hesitation about letting you know about it. It is one of the most empowering things I've ever seen. He endured the war in Iraq. I don't know how many times that he was deployed there, in one of the most difficult tasks that a person could have as a Marine sergeant. His story just blows my mind. Suffering under legalism, coming home after the war, his service in the harshest of war conditions with PTSD, and then diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And now is completely wheelchair bound. This man encourages the daylights out of me. Oh my gosh. You don't get from Sean the peaches and cream version of life. You get the real version with the peaches and the cream too. but it's everything. And how I love that, because of the horrible denial of my own quote personal testimony in Christianity. The reality of this man's testimony is the reason the gospel exists. It exists for this situation. This situation exemplifies the gospel through Sean Smith in the most powerful of ways. I cannot express to you or explain what's happening in the gospel revolution. People are oozing out of the woodwork from around the planet. Across the U.S., other countries, I'm getting calls from around the world, emails, that things that are happening, and these are happening to people who are trying to figure out, how do I share this with other people? I've got 200 people that are interested. We need this. We need that. And we are telling them, everyone, we are here to serve you. We're not in a pledge drive right now, so I'm not bringing this up for you to be inspired to give in our pledge drive. But I've got to tell you guys that do invest in this financially. We are so limited in how we could possibly express to you what your funds are doing. We do so much on so little. Now, I'm not supposed to say that because we're supposed to tell you, you know, if you don't give, we're not going to do it. Folks, we'll do everything we can with what we've got. And the more you help, the more we will be able to do it. Whatever you're giving right now, if you truly can afford that, could you afford to double that? I want you to ask yourself that. Could you afford, if you're giving $5 a month, could you afford to do 10? If you're doing 25, could you afford to do 50? If you're doing 100, could you afford to do 200? We have a relatively small base of support, but it is powerful support. We are looking to expand that base, and it is already expanding. It expanded just this last time. I think we had more contributors as far as the number of contributors than we've had for quite some time. And I was so pleased to be a part of that and get to talk to all these folks. And they all told me I could call them back. So
let me read you something which somebody said on our Facebook. No, not our Facebook, on our website, www.gospelrevolution.com. About this last podcast, he said, about I was called to preach by a monkey. This is by Rob Crazy Keys. And he says, getting out of those cages was a start of contentment for me. I have no cages now thanks to this ministry. Courageously telling the truth. Thanks, Dr. Bartlett. Oh, I'm not just a prophet.
You just got doctored.
Dang, I hope I never go to the vet and hear that. But you bet. I am now Dr. Prophet Bartlett. You'd better treating me with respect there, Mr. Michael. And anyway, so that was Rob Crazy Keys. Listen, these are testimonials. They keep coming in. They never stop. If you want to know what your money is doing, firstly, if you want to know what we're doing and you are not giving anything in, we're just getting the gospel out around the world.
Oh, and it's working.
Start giving in.
Be a part of this, folks. Be a part of it. It's working. It's working. Oh, my gosh. I hoped beyond hope that before I took my last breath, that the message of God's grace would rise to the level of debate in the Christian world. We already accomplished that around the entire planet. You brought the message of grace to the forefront, whether they agree with it, disagree with it, or preach a comfortable message of grace for Christians. They are at least talking about it, folks. And you did that. You brought the message of God's grace to the level to where that it is being debated in most every denomination around the planet.
Not just that, but we are making inroads to Africa that, and we haven't tried to make these. These people came to us. Now, number one, there is a wonderful connection we have with Ethiopia, and we'll talk about this in a moment. We have a marvelous connection with Moses Garta, Moses and Elizabeth Garta in Kenya. And now you will see somebody called Charles Saini, or Saini, S-A-I-N-I, who calls Mike and I men of God. Well, I think we are. But honestly, this is a little forgotten, the poorest nation in the world, I believe, and in Africa. And I'm going to try and get Bibles in there. Now, I want to get 500 Bibles in there. And if you would like to help me, I would like you to email freedom@gospelrevolution and let me know what you're prepared to help me with about that. I don't know yet what it's going to cost us, but I want to get these Bibles to Charles and his family. Charles is, as I understand it, pastoring a little church there in the Chippewa language in Malawi, and I want to. He seems to have latched on to the gospel revolution and to myself, and I just want to put everything into that I can in order to justify his belief in the gospel.
Yes.
So, family, my intent is to get Bibles in there. so that these people can read in their own language and see for themselves what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we have this, it seems to be a hook into Africa for some reason.
Yeah, and it keeps coming up in individual places that are not connected to the others.
Not just that, but they keep coming up in areas that cannot really do anything financially for the gospel.
Exactly.
The only places that we have to access funds to feed this hunger for the gospel is in Western nations.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in film? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard? Make a little sign? Email or do Facebook? Anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel.
That brings us to a video that we saw this week up on Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Just came up last night, that is Sunday night, by Nardos Kabedi.
Kabed.
Tell us about this, Mike.
Well, Nardos is a pastor there in Calgary, Alberta, of an Ethiopian church who started attending the meetings in Calgary last spring.
And how did he find us?
Well, he found us because of the advertising that we paid for there in Calgary, Alberta. Now, because of that expense that was covered by gospel revolutionaries like yourself, we have another pastor on board. We have more success with pastors than any other group on planet Earth. I was a pastor. Don was a pastor. Wade Brewer was a pastor. Nardos, a pastor there, who has just resigned after hearing the gospel and consuming the PowerCast, consuming the CDs. Transformation in his family has been profound. He will be sharing during the conference there also at the first part of one of the sessions. So we are just so amazed at what is happening in this situation. And also, he's Ethiopian. The church he pastors is Ethiopian. They have sponsored people to immigrate to Canada from Kenya. And he has a cousin who is a pastor in Kenya. It's just crazy. I'm telling you, we couldn't have networked this ourselves and come up with something better for the gospel than this.
And what is so striking about this is Ethiopia, historically, was the first country outside of Jerusalem to which the gospel was sent. If you look at Philip, the evangelist, the experience he had with the Ethiopian eunuch who was the minister of finances for Queen Candace of Ethiopia, and if you look at a lot of the claims that are made for where is the Ark of the Covenant and a whole bunches of other things, Ethiopia is one of the oldest, it is the oldest country we know associated with Israel from the get-go. And here we have a gentleman who's come to Canada. He lives in Canada. He's pastored an Ethiopian church in Canada. And who knows where he may go from here? Who knows who he may contact from here? But it's gospel revolutionary dollars that have made it possible for this video to be made. Now, why is he doing this?
He wants people to come to the conference. He has an audience through this particular venue. I don't understand it myself, but I don't need to. But it's a 10-minute interview in which he is appealing to people to attend the conference. interviews me, introduces me to people that have never heard me before. And that he's done for us completely free. So his contribution to the ministry as a result of people investing in the gospel is tremendous. So now we have access to so many more ears in the Calgary area. We have access to more ears in Ethiopia and all over Africa as a result of this investment that the people of the Gospel Revolution have put into.
And if you want to see that video, you can see it on Facebook, on the group Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution.
I will be doing more videos with Nardos. He's asked me to continue doing interviews with him that he can post and get them out there. And I told him we most certainly would do that. So, and I know he's just now getting the kinks and the bugs out of his operation to get this fully functional. And so be patient where that's concerned, but it's certainly wonderful what he is doing and what's being accomplished by it. And we can't tell you what all. We can tell you what, but what all. There is no telling what all is happening through this one outlet.
All they care about is getting money, 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 money.
If you need a fast injection of gospel CPR, that is the consistent, persistent, and repetitive joy of the gospel, then tune into Gospel Revolution Radio, playing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, thanks to Marcel Roos in Holland. Over two decades of internet activity, forums, articles, seminars, 24/7 radio, videos, Facebook, podcasts, we've just got it all, and just for you. www.gospelrevolution.com. Michael, getting back to the new articles on the website, I posted an article that came up because simply I was answering somebody else on Facebook. For those of you who, by the way, have seen my Facebook post that I am reducing my friends, the reason I did that was because I'm having I don't know what to call it, a midlife Facebook crisis. Let's call it that. And nobody involved with the Gospel Revolution am I going to shed, but I think it'd be fair to say I am reconfiguring my focus when it comes to Facebook. So anyway, I wrote in this article, Peter, James, John, and the Seven Churches. Now, this was something we did quite some time ago in our podcast, but this is the first time I've written about it. And I think that sometimes some of the things that we do, which are of note, require us to record them in different formats so that the most people possible can read them. I wrote in this article, which is, if you go to www.gospelrevolution.com, go down to the right-hand column under articles, latest articles, you'll see Peter, James, John, and the Seven Churches. Why ever I wrote it in bold and in capital letters, I don't know. But anyway.
You must have really meant it.
I was serious about this. I wrote, it seems apparent in any logical exploration of the New Testament that Paul stood at odds with the other writers. James. It's easy to forget that James was never an apostle and was never a follower of Jesus during his lifetime. In fact, James belittled and derided Jesus, John 7 verse 5. At one time, he and the others even presumed Jesus to be insane, Mark 3:21. Then later, James, without any recorded conversion experience, and compare that with Paul's conversion that was recorded, James was press-ganged into the top job, probably by his mother, as was the custom in the Middle East of the times after the death of the CEO, Jesus. Peter was the apostle who saw a vision of a sheet let down from heaven, Acts 10:11,
yep.
And the voice of God saying, "Do not call unclean that which I have cleaned," past tense.
Yes.
In case you missed that, past tense. When he reports this back to the other leaders at Jerusalem, Peter accurately recounts the vision, but as is clear in Acts 17:11, they all, Peter especially, chose to see salvation not as a finished work, as God had already said, cleaned, past tense, but chose to see it as a future possibility based on the response of the listener to the gospel. John was the apostle who, after God had plainly stated that the Gentiles had already been cleansed, insisted on the Old Testament doctrine of the confession of sins. The writer to the Hebrews said this, Hebrews 6:1 and 2, "Therefore, leaving the principles of the doctrine of Christ, let us go on to perfection, not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works and of faith towards God, of the doctrine of baptisms, and of laying on of hands, and of resurrection from the dead, and of eternal judgment." These were all Old Testament doctrines, including when on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, hands were laid on a goat to transfer sin from the people to the sacrificial goat, and confession was made of sin. That John, like James and Peter, were fully convinced that Jesus was simply an addition, an add-on. You know, in the old days, we used to have cars and we'd put little pom-poms, we'd hang pom-poms from the rearview mirror, and sometimes on the hood of the car, we'd put a little decorative piece, or sometimes on the back of the car, we'd put some decorative pieces. That, as I see it, is how Jesus is seen in most Christian circles. He's an add-on. He's a decorative add-on.
Yes.
He's not anything of real substance. He's just a bit of, it's Moses plus Jesus. But anyway.
Dashboard Jesus.
Oh, you know I'm going to play that song. Here it is. Just in case you didn't ever hear it. Now we're going to.
God forbid someone not hear that song.
Don't care if it rains or freezes, as long as I've got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard of my car. My trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Oh, plastic Jesus, plastic Jesus, riding on the dashboard of my car. Well, I'm afraid he'll have to go. His magnets ruin my radio. If I have a wreck, he'll leave a scar.
It's all my fault, as usual.
Mate, the prophet always answers to the apostle. You want to start this stuff, the prophet will continue. Because he feels it's, well, his, the way he does. It's the way he rolls. You remember?
It's the way he doth it.
he doth it. That John, like James and Peter, were fully convinced that Jesus was simply an addition to the Old Testament law can clearly be seen in the seven letters to the seven churches in Revelation, in which the divide between Paul and the other three becomes even clearer. Notice, please, that in the so-called letters to the seven churches, we learn the following. Number one, pleasing God is all about your works. Faith has no place in pleasing God whatsoever. Elsewhere, Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. But in these letters, it's all about works, works, works. In these seven letters to seven churches, the word works is mentioned 11 times, while the word faith, as relating to the readers, is mentioned only once. Join your own dots. Note, Revelation 2:23 says this, and I will kill her children with death. Sounds like Jesus to me. And all the churches shall know that I am he which searches the reins and hearts, and I will give unto every one of you according to your works. Sound like Jesus to you? 2. All the sins mentioned are old covenant sins. Just as in the book called James, all of the sins enumerated in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation are peculiarly Jewish sins, and they were all apparently sufficient to get your salvation annulled. Revelation 3:5. As an example, eating food offered to idols. Revelation 2:14 says, "But I have a few things against you, because you have them there who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols and to commit fornication." You'll find this also in Revelation 2:20. In Revelation 2:5, it says, "Remember therefore from whence thou art fallen, and repent, and do the first works, or else I will come unto you quickly, and I will remove your candlestick out of his place, except you repent." What exactly are the first works? Well, for a Jew...
I'm so sorry.
Mate.
This just sounds... I remember how intently we read this with such dire consequences. And what I don't know when you read that, it's like, "I'm going to come take your candlestick away." It's like, really?
Well, I've still got electric light. You can have the candlestick. I hear you. So what were the first works for a Jew? They are always the Mosaic Law, plus sacrifices, circumcision, offerings, tithing, and Sabbath keeping. All of these preceded the Mosaic Law, and they were all terminated in the death of Christ. When he became all of these things, in which a small portion was removed in order to sanctify the remainder. In Jesus, a small piece of flesh, Jesus, was cut off from the land of the living in order to sanctify all of the remainder of human flesh, that'd be you and me. He became our circumcision. The third thing we learn from Revelation and the seven churches is this: your salvation is always in doubt. Listen to Revelation 3:5. "He that overcomes, the same shall be clothed in white raiment." Well, who wouldn't want that? "And I will not blot out his name." I will not blot out his name from the book of life, "but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. If God is well prepared to blot selected names out of the book of life, then according to Christian doctrine and Revelation 20 verse 12, you will be judged according to your works and not by your faith." And then Revelation 20:15 consigns you to hell immediately. Go check it out. Your salvation is always in doubt. The number four thing we learn from the seven letters to the seven churches is that God's greatest attribute is that of unrelenting vengeance rather than a ministry of mercy. Revelation 2:23 says this, "And I will kill her children with death." You don't do what God wants, he's going to kill your children with death. He's going to kill you with death because you're the child of some kind of blasphemy. Sound like Jesus to you? The fifth important thing we learn from the seven churches of Asia is the target of these letters is none other than Paul himself. What do we actually know about the Judaizers who followed Paul around to reconvert Paul's converts, Jews and Gentiles alike? Back to Judaism plus Jesus, which is what it was. A, we know that Paul withstood at least one of them to the face for duplicity in Galatians 2:11. "But when Peter was come to Antioch, I, Paul, withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed." Peter was blameworthy. See, we know that Paul had very little respect for the Gang of Three and their followers. Galatians 2:5-6 says, "We did not give in to them for a moment, so that the truth of the gospel might remain with you. As for those who seemed to be important, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not judge by external appearances. Those men added nothing to my message. Can you taste the sarcasm here? As for those who seemed to be important. And just in case we missed the sarcasm first time around, Paul cutely reminds us in Galatians 2:9, and when James, Cephas, and John, now he names them, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that had been given unto me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. Check out the Greek here and you will find that a better rendition is, and when James, Cephas, and John, who thought themselves to be pillars, etc. D. We know that James was personally responsible for the discord that occurred in Antioch. Galatians 2:12, 13 says, for before that certain came from James, Peter ate with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. He says who the circumcision is, people who James sends out.
Yeah.
And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. The dictionary definition for dissimulation is this: to conceal one's true motives, thoughts, etc., by some pretense, speak or act hypocritically. It sound like Jesus to you? Sounds like the people that James sent down. To understand the full gravity of this statement, read that again carefully and note that James sent those who were practiced in the art of hypocrisy. James was either willfully coming against the gospel or he was an extremely poor judge of character in choosing hypocrites as his emissaries. Either way, James was a jerk and Paul was well and truly his target for correction. E. We know that the gang of three, Peter, James, and John, were so successful in hijacking the gospel and morphing it into a Jesus plus religion, shame-based behavior modification system, which in modern Christianity it has remained to this day. 2 Timothy 1:15 says this, this you know, that all those in Asia have turned away from me, amongst whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes. And when we read the seven letters to the seven churches in Revelation, where were those seven churches? That's right. Asia. F. Who else in the whole Bible is recorded as saying that eating meat of any kind is permissible so long as you have faith to eat it and that you do not cause your brother to stumble in doing so? Paul alone. And yet, what are the deadliest of sins found in these seven letters? That's right, eating meat offered to idols. Revelation 2:14 says, but I have a few things against you, because you have them there that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. This sin is repeated to more than one of these churches. Now, here is a passing strange thing. When you enter an Asian restaurant, Chinese or otherwise, look around yourself and you may well see a little shelf on the wall with incense burning and an apple or an orange in a saucer. I started my chef duties in a Chinese restaurant, so I understand this. What you're looking at is meat offered to idols. And Christians happily ignore this instruction by John, as that fruit will be in your meal tomorrow. Join your own dots, because religion is so amusing. Sixth thing we learn in these seven letters is the implicit references against Paul, who called himself an apostle who was never a disciple during Jesus' lifetime. That's right, Paul. With that in mind, let's read Revelation 2:2. It reads, I know your works and your labor and your patience and how you cannot bear them which are evil, and you have tried them which say that they are apostles and are not, and you found them to be liars. How about Revelation 2 verse 9? I know your works and tribulation and poverty, but you are rich, and I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. How about Revelation 3:9? Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. In this verse, we have a double header. Even if we do not think that this verse is referencing Paul, there is no escaping the clear and simple fact that John here is claiming that Jesus is saying that some humans will be forced to worship some other humans. Sound like Jesus to you? Number 7. Let's look at the unfulfilled promises. Revelation 2:26 through 28 says, "And he that overcomes and keeps my works until the end, to him will I give the power over the nations. To him I will give power over the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron. As the vessels of a potter, they shall be broken to smithereens, even as I received of my Father, and I will give him the morning star." Question number 1. Humans here are promised that they shall rule somebody with a rod of iron. Sound like Jesus to you? Question number 2. Have you or anyone you know ever seen this promise ever come true? Question number 3. Jesus allegedly here says, "I'll give him the morning star." Who is the morning star? Isaiah 14 verse 12 says, "It is Satan."
Don, thank you so much for writing this. Number one, it brought back several incredible memories for me in this process of understanding the gospel. And then these glimpses into where the book of Revelation fits in this whole thing. The point that you made about the fact that this letter is written to the churches of Asia. And when you read Paul's statement, he said all of the churches in Asia had forsaken him.
Yeah.
So these folks were open to a message that was not Paul's. Think of that.
Now, Galatia is in Asia. Or was considered in Asia. It's actually, I think, in Turkey now. But it was it came from there were French people from Gaul who were fierce warriors. Mm. They were actually Celts, most likely from the tribe of Dan.
Wow!
And they were imported. They were such good warriors. The Romans imported them to a place which ended up with their name, Galatia. And in that, he said, anyone who preaches another gospel, he essentially said, God damn them. Let them be accursed. And he said, even if an angel comes preach, do you think that Paul actually thought that angels would preach another? No, he's talking about men.
Yeah, because it just means messengers.
Yeah, yeah, angelos, yes.
Yes. Now, you've added a dimension to this understanding for me just now, because I did not know that the church at Galatia was a church of Asia.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder Paul was writing this letter to them. Obviously, they had forsaken him, and he's asking, why have they so quickly changed their views to what Paul called another gospel?
Preached by perverts.
Yes, preached by perverts and named them by name. Where was it that Paul said, all those that are at Asia have forsaken me?
He wrote that in 2 Timothy just before his head rolled into a basket.
Wow. Well, impressive. Goodness gracious. Very impressive. These are the things that we in the Gospel Revolution address that nobody else will. If you teach grace the way Paul taught grace, no religion can remain intact. If there's anything more disgusting to me than a legalistic teacher, it is a grace teacher trying to make grace palpable to Christianity.
Mm.
That's nauseating to me. Now, you guys know who you are. You know what you're doing, and you know why you're doing it. You know that your teachings on grace are designed so that you will not offend, so that you can remain within the established Christian denomination that you're in. But, you know, come on, you guys know better than this. I know some of you dudes. I've talked to many of you about the gospel. You walk away with your head hung in shame that you give such a gospel that is so inept. There's no nourishment in it. There's no truth in it. You can't preach grace at all unless you preach it all. There's no marginal grace. There's no grace that is acceptable to a religion. Grace is offensive to every religion on earth, and especially to Christianity. If what you are saying about grace and law doesn't get you thrown out of a church, you're not teaching grace.
Have a listen to this by Randy French. Here is our Randy French spot.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
Hello, this is Randy French coming to you from my recording studio in Coast Guard City, USA, Grand Haven, Michigan, on the Lake Michigan shoreline. Recently, in the editing of my upcoming book, I am using a software program that I highly recommend called Power Bible. I also use the Thayer's Lexicon and other Hebrew and Greek to English dictionaries in the process. But lately, after picking Don Bartlett's brain almost daily, I've learned you cannot trust any translation of the Bible. For that matter, I've learned you cannot trust a Strong's, Thayer's, or a Vine's lexicon either, because they all have their own slants and prejudices according to the knowledge and the religious information they each had been exposed to. In the editing of my book, I have learned it's impossible not to have a personal slant or opinion according to what you've been exposed to throughout your life in the way of religious teachings and doctrines. Now, with that being said, let me share this small portion concerning the King James translation out of my book called I Used to Be a Christian, but Jesus Set Me Free. This is a small clip from a chapter called Comments Paul Made About the Law. Is there no end to the Roman Catholic heresy in this example of a hugely misleading religious translation in the King James? Is it any wonder why Christianity is losing so many members and in such disarray? The verse that I'd like to draw attention to right now is 2 Corinthians 5:17. This is the King James Version, of course. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away, and behold, all things are become new. Okay, I put my own inflections in there just to draw attention to some of the problems with this King James translation. We learn that if, and, but, or maybe any lucky man were to be found in Christ, he could be a new creature. Old things, you know, your doing bad things and bad habits, would finally come to an end. And behold, you might finally start being a nice guy and quit sinning so much. Now, come on, that's funny, but true. Here is my translation of 2 Corinthians 5:17 using the Strong's Greek Dictionary out of Power Bible. Therefore, if any new creation were inside of Christ, he is a new creature and a new man that never existed before. Old laws are passed away, and behold, all the rules and principles are completed and finished on the cross. Now that is a much more accurate translation from the original Greek. Wow! Talk about getting the truth right out of the gospel with such heretical orthodox teachings. Old laws are passed away, friends. They were completed, finished, and abolished by Jesus on the cross. You are now the new, incorruptible creation and the new man that only Paul ever mentioned in the entire Bible. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Good news Randy French.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
If you need a fast injection of gospel CPR, that is the consistent, persistent, and repetitive joy of the gospel, then tune into Gospel Revolution Radio, playing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in Holland. Over two decades of internet activity, forums, articles, seminars, 24/7 radio, videos, Facebook, podcasts, we've got it all just for you. www.gospelrevolution.com. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. The earliest church fathers who understood the gospel in their native language, Greek, and with their native mindset, Greek, to which the original Greek text was aimed, were much closer to Jesus than the later Latinizers of Christianity, that is to say, the various Roman Catholic popes, Jerome, the translator of the Bible into Latin, along with Augustine, the father of most modern Christian thinking. The author John Wesley Hansen in 1899 published a book entitled Universalism, the Prevailing Doctrine of the Christian Church During Its First 500 Years. In it, he quotes these early church fathers in their own words, along with the statements of modern scholars, historians, and critics of all sides of opinion. You can pick this little gem up for 99 cents Kindle edition, which you can read for free on your phone, tablet, or computer, and for as little as $8 for a hard copy on Amazon. Go get you one. You'll never regret it. After reading it, you will become an instant hit at church dinners and your local minister's fraternal. Friends, if you liked what you heard today and you want to get in touch with us, call area code 561-557-1329. Speak to us about anything, how you want to participate, if you have a question, or just go to www.gospelrevolution.com. So family, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. I had a wonderful time. How about you, Don?
I enjoyed myself, particularly when I can make fun of you.
Well, that was kind of my greatest joy this evening, too, is you making fun of me.
I was hoping your greatest joy would be in officially making me a prophet.
Yes. That with other titles, it was a great joy. Thank you guys for listening in. As you can tell, we have a lot of fun doing this. Shame on us for having so much fun. We hope that you have had fun, and we hope that you've learned a lot of gospel during this process. We love you a lot. Hold on, folks, there in Canada. I'm on my way. Can't wait to see you all and hug your neck. Love you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember that just because you're offended don't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
It gets better.
All right. Thank you, Michael.